under 92 pence. That's the world tonight. This is Ritula Shah for now from me. Good night and have a good weekend.
Studio production was by Chris Maitman. The editor was Jeremy Hayes. And now on BBC Radio 4, we journey into the outer fringes of the galaxy for the final instalment of our Book at Bedtime, Owen Colfer's new novel in the Hitchhiker's Guide series, and Another Thing.
The business end.
Prosthetic Jeltz's armpits were moist with delight.
"What do you think of your father now, Moan? There were whispers back in Megabrantis that I was past it. Imagine that. By the book, Jeltz, past it.
By the book.
My new sobriquet, Moan. Like it.
What happened to what a bastard?"
Jeltz laid an almost boneless hand on his son's shoulder.
"I am hoping that you will be utter bastard one day."
Moan hung his head.
"I already am. We all are."
Jeltz felt his armpit gland squirt.
"Well said, my boy. Well said."
The gunner interrupted this almost tender moment.
"Sir, the Earthlings!"
Jeltz flapped a hand.
"Exterminate them."
"Moan?" Constant Moan was racing across the bridge and clobbering the gunner across his blubbery brow, just as the officer's fingers feathered the fire button. The gunner's eyes crossed, uncrossed, then closed. The crew froze, to see what Moan's fate would be. Jeltz leaned back with a squish of abdominal liquid.
"Constant Moan, I am intrigued."
"This is not right,"
Moan blurted.
"How do you mean?" asked Jeltz, wattle wobbling. "Please don't tell me you have developed morals to go with those nimble feet of yours. Do not tell me that my son has evolved."
"I mean, this is not right, as in, it is not by the book."
"Not by the book, you say?"
Jelt swiveled towards the compost. "Record this, would you? I may have to explain the execution to his mother." Moan forged ahead with his explanation.
"Our order was to eliminate all Earthlings. These people bought a planet from the Magrathians, and the Magrathians are a registered business with the government. The Central Planning Office approved Nano as a taxpaying member planet of the Planetary Union, as governed by the Galactic Government."
Jeltz shouted into the PA.
"We still need to eliminate the Earthlings."
"Megabrantis also blanket approved the citizenship applications of the planet's owners. Legally, the Earthlings are no longer Earthlings. They are Nanoites, or maybe Nanoceans, or Nanolings, I'm not sure. But I am sure that if you zap these people, you zap a nice group of high-band taxpayers who've never filed a return. Imagine. By the book, Jelts, frying citizens who owe back tax? Wouldn't Hoops the Runaround love to hear about that?"
"Wow," said Jelts,
and it was not a word he used often.
"Constant Moan, my son, you have scuppered this mission. Come stand at my elbow." "Old Hoops would have been all over this,"
Jelts confided to his son.
"Instead, thanks to you, we return heroes, with a god's scalp under our belts and a heads-up for the tax office. Now squeeze onto this chair beside me, and we shall enjoy the false hope of hyperspace together." "Look at my son, all wide-eyed,"
thought Jeltz, as the deck swabs greased Moan down for the chair.
"He will be one of the greats, a destroyer of worlds, an utter bastard."
Nano, the town square of Kong.
A collective "Oh!" rose from the crowd as the Vogon Bureau cruiser absented itself in a charming display of blue hyper-engine pyrotechnics. Seyfod, with his innate sense of the theatrical, clambered atop the statue pedestal.
"Hey, the Vogons have been vanquished! Thor has saved you!"
"Which Thor?"
said Hillman, puzzled. "The dead disappeared one." Seyfod threw him a look, which asked Hillman just how stupid he was exactly.
Oh, of course, he cried. Thor has saved us.
Hillman mounted the pedestal.
And he will come again when he is needed.
Now you're getting it, said Zaphod.
The Lord Thor will communicate with his people only through me.
I can pretty much guarantee that. Whatever Hillis says, that's what Thor, who saved us, wants you all to do.
And if we don't?
Called a voice. Zaphod frowned.
Then Thor would be most unhappy, and so would his hammer.
Barely a week had passed since the aborted Vogon attack, and Arthur Dent and his daughter Random were sitting in Hillman Hunter's office, inquiring after the progress of their citizenship applications. She needs to go to school, said Arthur.
I have 8 master's degrees and a double doctorate, protested his daughter.
Virtual degrees, said Arthur calmly. I don't think they count.
Of course they count, Daddy. Don't be so Cro-Magnon.
That girl even sits sulky, thought Hillman Hunter.
I have heard, he said aloud, that the University of Croxwan rules on virtual degrees if you can pass the qualifying exam. I could put in an application for you.
And what of Zaphod Beeblebrox? He had decided to sneak off into improbability during the night. He would have preferred to make his exit covered in the confetti from a parade given in his honour, but there was the matter of the gold he had liberated from Hillman's safe as payment for Thor's sacrifice. Ford Prefect tossed a handful of rice into the air over Zaphod's head.
Thanks for the send-off, cousin, but I'm trying to skulk here. You sure you won't hitch a ride?
No thanks, Zaph. This planet doesn't have so much as a single article in the guide. I'm going to stick around for a couple of weeks and write it up.
Sounds good, said Zaphod wistfully.
So why don't you stay?
Zaphod struck a pose on the gantry of the spaceship, the Heart of Gold. One leg bent, forearm across his knee. From somewhere, an organic bulb flickered on, etching his jaw in crimson light.
It's not my destiny, Ford, he said, a sudden breeze fanning his hair behind him. The universe has different plans for Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Well, look who it is, said Leftbrain. The great galactic president gracing us with his presence.
Zaphod heaved the sack of gold into a locker.
Hey, LB. Nice work with the light and wind machine.
As he sauntered onto the bridge, Zaphod noticed a hammer icon revolving on the main screen.
When did that come in?
A few hours ago.
On screen, the hammer icon twirled and became a video box.
Hey, Zaph. Hello? Hello?
Thor's hirsute features filled the screen.
Oh, okay. Okay, now I see it. We're on. Hello, Zaphod. This is your client, Thor the Thunder God. I am not dead, as you probably guessed.
Thor leaned in close to the camera.
It was the martyr comment. Like you said, I was walking along that big bomb, thinking that if I let it kill me, then the humans would think I died for them. So, I gave it 100% up to the Vogon ship when I heard the detonator spark and hid in their pipework for a minute. I thought I'd tap the ship with Mjolnir, make it look like a bit of shrapnel did for her, but then they just took off into hyperspace. Don't know why. Anyway, that's it. I'm off to Asgard now, ready for resurrection if you need me. Oh, last thing. Keep your eye out for my helmet. I must have lost it in the explosion. I'm gonna sign off. I have another call coming in.
Thor beat his chest with one fist, then winked at the camera.
Nice work, manager.
Zaphod closed the video window, flabbergasted. Leftbrain bobbed before Zaphod's eyes.
You don't remember saying anything about martyrs, do you?
No, replied Zaphod. But that doesn't mean I didn't say it.
So you actually thought your one client was dead?
Of course not. You can't kill a god.
What about that special bomb?
Zaphod snorted.
The quest? Who do you think sold that to the Vogons? I'm surprised it didn't fall out of the sky. I put a lawnmower engine on that thing.
Leftbrain was quiet for a moment.
Just the two of us again. What would you like to do?
Nano.
Arthur stuck to a couple of weeks of stay-at-home daddy,
making sandwiches, then began looking for excuses to go on a trip.
"Just you and me," he told Ford. "Like the old days, but without the exploding planets."
"No can do, mate," Ford had responded, trying his best to seem regretful, which was difficult with two delightful masseuses twanging his hamstrings. "There are an inordinate amount of spas on this little planet, and I need to sample them all. I owe it to the hitchhikers out there." And so Arthur was forced to explore alone. He decided to dress up his trip as paternal duty. "I'm travelling to Cruxwan to vet this university for you," he told Random. "Your mother and Wowbagger will be back from their cruise in a few days. It's only a dozen jumps, so it shouldn't take more than a week. I'm leaving you a supply of frozen sandwiches, so everything should be fine. Any questions?"
"What kind of sandwiches?"
So now Arthur was seated in a lovely wraparound gel seat in business class on a hyperspace liner. His seat had been purchased with space points from an account he'd opened in his pre-Lamuella days. The Fenchurch days. The gel seat folded around him, and he selected The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy from the touch menu. Arthur had the little icon rub itself along a link to Cruxwan. There were 3,000 articles. "Plenty to keep me going for the entire journey," he thought. "Hyperspace, I have missed you." The jump was smoother than he remembered. Must be these new seats. Before the next jump, he was mildly surprised to find the chair beside him occupied. The newcomer was chatting to him with some familiarity, as though they'd met before. The voice was one he knew, and so was the tilt of the head and the sheaf of hair tucked behind one ear. "Fenchurch." Fenchurch tapped him on the forearm. "And another thing," she said. "What other thing?" Arthur wanted to ask. "And what thing came before the other thing?" But when he raised his hands to cradle her face, he saw that his fingers were transparent. "What? Oh, no! The plural zone," he realised. "People from a plural zone should never travel in hyperspace. They could end up anywhere." Arthur saw Fenchurch reach for him, and then she was zooming away in a multicoloured elastic tunnel. "She's not zooming away," Arthur realised. "It's me." When he opened his eyes, he found himself sitting on a beach, very much like the one from his virtual life. There were differences in the curve of the coastline, but it was as near as made no difference. There was even a small hut just past the scrub line. He squinted against the glare of late evening sun rays and could not help but notice a squat yellow shape on the distant horizon. What? Surely not. A pootle-tink bird sidled alongside.
"Bloody Vogons,"
it said from the side of its beak.
"They've been here a few days. Apparently, someone forgot to file planning permission for that hut."
"Typical," said Arthur, then closed his eyes and wished he was somewhere else, with someone else. There is no such thing as a happy ending. Every culture has a maxim that makes this point. As Zem of Squawn Scheller's Ceta succinctly put it, the mattress never stays dry for long. However, the number one most overused quote on the subject of endings, happy or otherwise, comes from an old man who lived on a pole in Hawalius, who said simply that there is no such thing as an ending, or a beginning for that matter. Everything is middle. And so we reach the end of one of the middles.
And Another Thing by Owen Colfer was abridged by Penny Lester and read by Stephen Mangan with Peter Serafinovich. It was produced by Heather Lama. Tomorrow afternoon, The Saturday Play is a gritty detective story set not in San Francisco, as was the 1968 movie, but in its original location of New York, where Detective Frank Clancy is assigned to protect an important mafia witness. That's Robert L. Clancy's novel, dramatised for Radio 4, Bullet, at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon, where in a couple of minutes we've a good read with Sue McGregor.